Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening and welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. I'm glad you're joining us tonight. It's a special time. We're an hour later than we usually are, and that was to accommodate one of our guests, but it will be well worth it. Tonight is going to be a fantastic show. We have true crime author Donna Kaufman and one of the attorneys representing Rebecca Zahow's family, Marty Rudoy. Mr. Rudoy works with Ann Bremner on Rebecca's case. He's going to update us on that, and we'll also talk about the latest findings, and I say that in quotations, of the ex-wife and the mother of the little boy who died while Rebecca Zahow was watching him. We'll get into all of that in just a moment. Later in the show, Levi Page will be calling in, and we'll discuss the latest in the Drew Peterson case, or as I call it, the sidebar from hell case. It's all it is, sidebars. I mean, let's face it. But first off, it's time for The Legal Goo. The opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the guests and the host, and as with everything in my life, I take no responsibility for any of it. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely different and separate entity from WebSleuths.com LLC and from FormsForJustice.org. Okay, now that goo is out of the way, I would like to say hi to our executive producer, Kimster. Now, Kimster, in addition to being executive producer and head alien chaser, Kimster is also proud to wear the title of Bucket Chucker. Yes, in real life, Kimster is a Bucket Chucker. Look it up. It's absolutely true. Okay, we're going to go right now to, let's just get right to it. We're going to go to Donna Kaufman, true crime author. Good evening, Donna. How are you?
Hey, Trisha. Very good. Thanks. And hello to all the people in the audience.
And we're going to, let's welcome Mr. Marty Rudoy. And have I pronounced that right, Marty? I apologize.
Yeah. Yes, you did. That was okay. Fine. Thank you. Hi, Trisha.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Okay, first off, Let's talk a little bit about Dina Shacknai. She's requesting that Max's death, that's a little six-year-old that died a few days before Rebecca Zahow died. Supposedly he went over a railing and it was two stories high, or he was on the second floor and died. He was in a coma for a few days and then died. His mother is requesting that the investigation be reopened. Now, as part of that request, she released a photo, several photos of Max taken in the ICU just before he died. And it's interesting because she's also hired a biomechanical engineer and a medical pathologist. They claim that Max was assaulted. Basically, their report says that somebody threw Max over the railing. Now, if you look at the pictures of Max, I don't know. Obviously, there's so much more to it than just the pictures. But there's, to me, a little boy going over the railing and landing on that hard floor and maybe even hitting a table on the way down. None of those injuries at all look surprising. Donna Kaufman, true crime author, and you've been in this case from the very beginning. What do you think of this latest development?
Well, I think that anything that serves the parents of this little boy to find out everything that happened is well worth exploring. It's not unusual at all for somebody to bring in a second forensic pathologist, as the Zahow family brought in Dr. Cyril Wecht, with whom I write books. And in this case, Dina and Jonah, I assume mostly promoted by Dina, who's the mom of this six-year-old boy, wanted some answers. And so she hired an independent forensic pathologist and also a biomechanics expert. It's basically a forensic engineer, accident reconstructor. And those are absolutely great people to bring in. It's exactly what you want. And they both came... their job was to look at all the material that came out of the sheriff's office and the San Diego coroner's office and pick at it and find weaknesses and interpret it in a way that, you know, was their own spin. And the findings of the forensic pathologist said that Max had been murdered. The biomechanic expert did not go that far. He said, "I don't agree with the theory that the San Diego authorities say, but I support, you know, this investigation. When Jonathan Lucas, who is the medical examiner who performed the autopsy on behalf of San Diego County on Max as well as on Rebecca Zahow, when he looked at this, he was also very smart to bring in a forensic engineer, and that guy's name was Dr. Mark Gomez. And all of us online have seen the kind of stick figure drawings that he did to represent his theory of how the boy went over the railing. Let me give you some background on Max and what happened. This fall happened on July 11th of last year. He died on July 16th without ever having recovered or rallied whatsoever. And basically his parents turned off the equipment and donated his organs to several other families of adults and children who now he lives on through them. And I can't say enough about how wonderful that act was and what an unselfish act that is. In all their pain, they certainly did the right thing there.
Absolutely.
Max was his pictures. You just want to squeeze his little cheeks. He is so adorable. 6 years old, bundle of fun, 3'9" tall, 57 pounds. He was home alone in this house, which is called the Spreckles Mansion. And that was the summer house of his dad, Jonah, who's a pharmaceutical boss. And their main home is in Arizona. But they would spend the summers at this place. And he lived with Rebecca. And Marty can talk about Rebecca and her relationship to the Jonah's children, especially Max. But in the house that day was just Rebecca, who was in a downstairs bathroom, and she had just picked up her sister, who was, I think, 12 or 13. Her name is Zena. She was visiting from out of state, and she was in an upstairs shower. There are two stories in that house, and so she was, her bedroom was on the second floor. And Max, apparently, according to the police reports, nobody witnessed him going over the railing or landing on the ground, and nobody really saw what happened in the minutes leading up to this. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of reconstruct this whole thing to figure out what happened. His manner of death was deemed an accident by Dr. Lucas, and the cause of death was anoxic ischemic encephalopathy, which is his brain was deprived of blood and oxygen, and it was due, he had a cardiopulmonary arrest, so his heart stopped because of that, no blood to the organs, and he had a cervical spinal cord contusion, not a fracture. And if you look at the drawings that Dr. Lucas released, you see that there is a giant abrasion or contusion over his right eye. I mean, it's just giant over the top portion of his face. Mm-hmm. So to me, that tells me that's where he hit the ground.
He hit, yeah.
And he never recovered. He
right.
You know, he hit face first.
Okay. Go ahead.
So Rebecca told the police, let me just back up a little. Let me set the scene. There's the foyer hallway. It's of this two-storied home. It's heavily carpeted. On the ground floor, on the first floor, there's a staircase. And to the left of that staircase, that's what we will call, for the purpose of this conversation, the stairway area. The stairs to the right of that are 11 stairs up. And then there's a landing, and you can go online and see Dr. Bowe's report for all these specific measurements, but this was just a, you know, conversational. Mm-hmm. So you get up the 11 stairs, then there's a landing, and the landing is maybe three or four paces, and then you turn left, and there's another set of stairs to the upstairs, and there are 9 stairs going up there. And then there's a railing as you're going upward, there's a railing that you hold on to. It's a wood solid railing that would be for your left hand, or if you're going mm-hmm. down, for your right hand. And that railing is consistent all the way up. On the landing, there's behind, there's a giant window. So that mm-hmm. kind of sets the stage. There's also a chandelier that is hanging from the second story ceiling on a very long chain. And the chain, it's a glass chandelier. And if you're on the landing, the top of that landing, of the railing of that landing, is where the bottom of that chandelier is. So that kind of mm-hmm. gives you a sense of that. And that chandelier hangs over that stairway area that we were discussing.
Okay.
So what they believe happened, what did happen, is that the boy ended up face down in that stairway area, and the chandelier was crashed next to him. The final link in the chain of that holds the chandelier to the ceiling, the one closest to the glass, was broken.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that sound, that huge crash, that caused Rebecca to rush out, and she saw the boy landing there. She doesn't remember turning him over, but she must have, because she began giving him CPR, and mm-hmm. she screamed at her sister to call 911. So that was done. When
okay.
the EMTs got there, they found the boy was not viable, and mm-hmm. He was on his back, and they brought him to first emergency hospital, then transferred him to a children's hospital, and he never rallied. So,
well, so that sets the picture. That's the whole scene right there of what we're talking about. We're with Donna Kaufman, true crime author, and we also have Mr. Marty Redoy, or I apologize, I keep getting that wrong. Anyway, we're talking about Max Shacknai and his death. Max Shacknai was the young son of Dina Shacknai, and Max was with Rebecca Zahau. Rebecca Zahau was there when Max had the accident that we just heard described by Donna Kaufman. And let's go to Marty. Mr. Redoy, basically this report by Max's mother, of the people that she hired, it basically comes out and says that they feel that he was thrown over the balcony or over the railing. Your response to that?
We think it's unsupportive. I've seen videotapes and pictures of Max and Rebecca, and there was nothing but a warm, loving, nurturing, supportive relationship. Rebecca treated Max like her own. It's a bit unfortunate that the parents had Max's body cremated, because some of the answers may no longer exist. And
right.
the family is Jewish, and it's not typical for Jewish families to cremate the dead. And let me say that we have been trying for more than 9 months to get Max's investigation reopened, because we, too, do not believe that the scenario painted by the sheriff is accurate.
Okay, wait, back up. I need to back up here, because I'm kind of surprised by that. We're talking with Marty Redoy, and he is one of the attorneys working with Ann Bremner, who is representing the Zahau family, Rebecca Zahau's family. I mean, why would you want it reopened when, I mean, basically that she's saying, Dina, the mother of Max, is saying that Rebecca threw him over the railing. Are you saying that there's something else? It didn't happen the way that the sheriff said? It seems fairly logical. And if it's reopened, are you suggesting that Rebecca may have had something to do with it? I'm surprised.
No, the idea that Rebecca had anything to do with it is preposterous. We don't believe it was homicide at all. We just believe that the mechanics of how the sheriff described the event is inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel terrible. Anytime you lose a child, especially a six-year-old, it's a tragedy. It's a twin tragedy when another family also loses a family member. And one of the reasons that we want the Max investigation reopened, as well as the Rebecca investigation, is we think if nothing had happened to Max, no one would have done anything to Rebecca. And she would have still been here with us now.
So it's all, you think it's all connected then? And that's
yes,
one of the reasons why you want to reopen. Well, on that theory, okay, now Rebecca, a few days after Max died, was found hanging outside and her legs bound together. Were her hands tied behind her back as well?
Yes, her hands were tied behind her back. There was a noose over her hair, and I don't know how many women would put anything over their hair and not brush their hair away if they could.
You would.
And over the noose was a T-shirt wrapped three times around her neck, and the tail, it was a tissue T-shirt from Target, and the tail of the T-shirt was stuffed in Rebecca's mouth.
And that's just, it's such a bizarre scene when you read up on it, because it looks like anything but a suicide to even a layperson looking at the information.
Exactly.
So here
by
we
the
have
way,
Max.
She,
yes.
I'm sorry. She was also naked.
And that's that. I don't think, if I remember reading correctly, I don't think there's ever been a suicide of a woman naked outside hanging. You know, that's just bizarre. But
I'm only aware of two naked women attempted suicides. One was a woman with a history of suicide attempts who took off her clothes and went down Niagara Falls. And the other one was a woman who jumped off a building in New York. She survived and she's still living, but she was naked at the time.
Yeah, but they obviously had severe mental problems. And Rebecca did not had none of these problems, correct?
No, she had no history of suicide, no history of depression. Searches on her computer by the police turned up no evidence of a search dealing with suicide or the right rope length to use or depression or anything. And you know what? You're in a mansion on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Why would anyone go to these lengths to commit suicide? Why not just take 50 steps out the front door and you're in 30 feet of water?
Right.
Why not take pills that are throughout the house?
Mm-hmm.
It's a much, much less painless
and
traumatic experience. We've had human factors engineers look at the Rebecca incident, and they say there's no way that Rebecca could have self-propelled herself over that balcony with her arms behind her back and her legs bound and her noose on and a T-shirt stuffed in her mouth. It can't happen, because you can't rejigger that stuff while you're hanging there. It has to be done before you go over
before
the balcony.
Before you go, yeah. You can't go over the balcony and then tie your hands.
Right. It couldn't happen. Mm-hmm. And there are what the sheriff considers footprints on the balcony, but they're too far away, considering her center of mass, to self-propel over that balcony.
There are just so many questions
now,
with that case. I'm sorry, go ahead.
With respect to Max, what was happening that morning is Max and Zena, the sister, Max and Rebecca woke Zena around 10 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to go to the beach. That was the plan for the day, to go to the beach. Zena went up to her bathroom to shower, and Max was sent to his room to clean it. He was cleaning his room. Now, we don't know why or how he fell, but he certainly fell. And you've got a dog. You've got soccer balls. Mm-hmm. You've got a Razor scooter. And you've got a low railing. And you've got a second story. And any one of those items or a combination could have caused Max to fall. He had a history of riding that skateboard on the second floor. He wasn't mm-hmm. supposed to, but he did. And I know six-year-olds. And, you know, you can get all these biomechanical engineers, but if a six-year-old wants to do something,
they'll do it.
They're amazing gymnasts.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that is the
they're
truth.
They're flexible.
Yes.
They're strong. And they're, I'm not going to say careless because I don't want to blame Max. But
right. Well, they haven't had any life
experience.
They don't
experience.
Have the same. Right.
Right. They don't
know
have the same
dangerous.
Regard.
Right.
Right. And it's just because they don't have the experience to know.
We're talking with Marty Rudoy, and Marty is one of the attorneys representing Rebecca Zahow's family, and we're also talking about Dina Shacknai's private investigation into her son Max's death a few days before Rebecca, quote-unquote, hung herself, according to the sheriff's report. And Mr. Rudoy, forgive me, I just need to connect something here because I'm still at, there's a little bit of a disconnect with me. Okay. You're saying that you agree you want Max's death investigation reopened, but not for the same reasons that Max's mother, Dina, wants them reopened. She thinks Rebecca
exactly.
threw him over the balcony. You're just saying, let's find out what really happened, because I don't think that's the way it happened. But you're maintaining that from what your position is, he did fall and it was an accident, correct? But you just want to know exactly
sure.
what happened? Or, well, I mean, I guess I don't understand why you still don't understand why you want it reopened and how that could help your case, other than just getting the dialogue going and making the sheriff do something, I guess.
Well, I think we want to clear up any doubts that there was any involvement of Rebecca.
Okay.
You know, I mean, the initial spin was that, well, she was under his care. You know what? You can't watch a six-year-old 24 hours
no.
a day.
You know what?
You can't.
Yeah.
You can't watch them clean up their room every mm-hmm. time. It just doesn't happen.
No.
It's a fantasy world. It doesn't happen in real life. Falls are the number one cause of accidents in the home. This, unfortunately, was just another one of them. What makes it compelling is that it was a mansion. A tycoon was the father, and then 2 days later, the 2-year live-in girlfriend turns up in a situation where nobody, if they saw that scene, nobody would think she killed herself.
Mm-hmm.
If you see someone hanging there with a T-shirt covering their head, and they're naked, and their hands are behind their back, tied, and their legs are tied, the last thing you think of is, oh, she committed suicide.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's just common sense. And I want to touch on something that you touched on as well, Mr. Rudoy, and that is watching children. You know, there but for the grace of God go I mean, there have been times when I lost my child when he was 3. You know, I didn't have my eyes on him. Boom, he was gone. And I don't think you can blame parents when their kids, you know, go off and do something because you can't watch them every second. And, you know, that really bothers me when people are so judgmental of parents. I'm not talking about the parents who leave their kids in the car, who ignore them and are irresponsible. I'm talking about the parents who are working like crazy. And you just, like you said, you can't watch the child every second. And that's what sounds like happened with Max. Let's go to Donna Kaufman, true crime author. Donna, you are very involved in this case. Let me ask you, you've been studying a little bit about the report that's been released by Dina Shacknai. What do you think? What, I mean, deep down in your heart, in every bit of knowledge that you can draw on, what do you think happened to Max?
Well, you know, I must say, until Dina's two experts released their reports, I hadn't really delved into the Max case. I was always a little uncomfortable about the Razor scooter, which was found on his leg, just laying up on one of his legs. But it's very important to note that the what the Dr. Lucas put out to the public was only a summary of Max's injuries, basically what killed him. He did not release the full autopsy report, but these new experts have seen all of that, and they've seen the photos. I wish I had. I would like to have access to them, because perhaps I would have even more understanding of what happened. The reports do talk about a couple of things. Rebecca had stated to one of the police officers that she thought that the last words that Max said was Ocean, which was the name of the dog. I doubt that very much, not with the injury he sustained of his cervical spine. And also, it reminds me, I worked on the Princess Diana case, and there are people who swear that she talked about, you know, send a message to my sons. And, you know, she was just jabbering away. It's a physical impossibility. What happens
right.
is when the trachea, which is an airway, fills with blood, there's a gurgling sound that comes out, and I suspect that's what Rebecca heard. And the brain wants to hear something
yes.
that gives us pleasure or comfort, and I think that's what that was. The Razor scooter placement is odd, because who put that there? Rebecca and Zena are looking at his head and his airway, perhaps. And I wanted to read over Zena's police interview, but I never got to it, to see whether she accounts for having put that on him. But whatever it is, however it got on him, it was very lightly there. There's no corresponding injury. There's no bruising or abrasion from that. So it kind of doesn't go anywhere to bring that up. They also are upset that there was no DNA testing on his fingernails. But you know what? He lived in the house with these people, unless you're suggesting that some intruder came in and killed him. There's nothing to be attained by that. But the main thing is, if there had been a kind of a fight on the top of the stairs and he went over, that would be an accident. It's not murder. It's not. There's no scenario here for murder. An accident, a freak accident. Okay, I'll give you that. In any scenario, it's a freak accident. But let's just say if somebody in one of those two women were assaulting him at the top of the stairs, which is the theory that the new experts have created, and he tumbled over the railing and went down. There's no assurance he would die. Most likely, he would have a broken leg, a broken arm,
and
he
would
tell his daddy, and those two people would be in a whole bunch of trouble. But he landed on his head, and that was so weird and freaky, and you can't account for that. So that makes it an accident, and that makes this whole thing kind of pointless. They also talked about there were no dicing abrasions on his hand from contact with the chandelier. But if he grabbed it from the cord, there wouldn't be any contact with the glass. And I will tell people that there's a film, Steve Martin film, called Cheaper by the Dozen. That is very, very close to the physical layout of that staircase and chandelier, and it shows a boy about Max's age on roller skates, and the kid gets the brainy idea to jump up and grab the cord of the chandelier, and instead of falling, he's swinging on it, and Steve Martin has to chase him. You know, that could have happened. There's nothing that says that didn't happen, and it's really a plausible scenario.
Absolutely.
One of the things that Dr. Bove did that was so brilliant, really, is just tests based on Max's center of gravity. And this is very key, and all the measurements are in the report. But basically, the railing on the second story railing was up to his breastbone. It would have been, he would have been 7 inches higher if he was on the Razor scooter. But still, you know, he could have leaned over that. It would have been difficult for him to have been tall enough, even standing on the dog, to lean over and topple head first, and then to grab the chandelier as well. So he can just say it's an unusual fall, but he can't quite say what it is, what happened.
Right.
And Dr. Gomez, who was the original engineer, did his theory that accounted for how he landed and also how he got injuries, topical injuries to the to his back.
Mm-hmm.
There are 7 of them, little red marks, that are in the Dr. Lucas's summary. And he believed that that was from hitting the railing as he was going down with his back. That could be. It also could be from the EMTs. We just can't be sure.
Right. Donna,
but
Donna,
his theory is, let me just say this,
okay,
is landing on his feet first and then falling over. I just don't see that. Where are the corresponding injuries to the legs and the feet? Again, I haven't seen the autopsy report. Maybe
right,
it's in there, but I think it would be mentioned if it were.
Donna Kaufman, hang on. We're going to switch topics here in just a little bit to talk about Drew Peterson. But I want to wrap this up with attorney Marty Rudoy. And Mr. Rudoy, you are working closely with Ann Bremner. You're one of the team of attorneys helping Rebecca's family get some justice in this case. Is there anything new that you can update us on? And let me just follow that up with this. On websleuths.com, that I am co-owner of, it's a very active case, and a lot of people care about Rebecca and her family. They care deeply, and they are always discussing the case and picking it apart. And if there's anything new you could offer us, I would really appreciate it.
What I can tell you is that we've been working with law enforcement over the past 7 months, and we're dealing with the Attorney General now. And
mm-hmm.
they've been reviewing the file for quite some time, and we expect to make a presentation in the next few weeks, and hopefully they will take steps to reopen the investigation. I will say that I and Ann, we both read Web Sleuths. We read other blogs and posting sites.
Mm-hmm.
And we do get information that we might not think of through those sites, and it's been a source of support for the family to know that there
good.
Are people who care. And if this case is cracked, it's going to be in some measure because of Web Sleuths and the other websites. We have followed up on some of the information in some of these sites, and they form a part of our presentation to law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
in addition, some of the people who post on there, we've contacted directly, and they have particular expertise that lead us to other experts. Now, with the exception of one expert who charged us $600, all of our experts, and we have more than a dozen of them, are all volunteers, none of whom believe that Rebecca committed suicide after
mm-hmm.
looking at the evidence. We had a human factors expert 6 months ago who did the body mass analysis, or the
mm-hmm.
center of mass rather than center of gravity analysis.
Right.
And law enforcement knows this, and it wouldn't be unusual if they shared that with Dina, and Dina had a similar report rebutting our findings. You know what happens? Our reports were not touted by a public relations agency in a
mm-hmm.
press release.
Right.
You know, my heart goes out to Dina. I have children. is a terrible thing to lose a child.
Mm-hmm.
But Dina's not the only mother who lost a child. Rebecca's mother lost a child.
Right.
And we hope the public feels sympathy for both families.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to bring closure to both families because they can't move on. Here it is a year later, and we're still talking about it. This case has struck a nerve, and it's not going to go away. There was no compelling reason to close the Rebecca investigation as early as they did. It was done the weekend of Labor Day, the Friday before Labor Day, the end of summer. There's no statute of limitations on murder. You could leave this unknown cause.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't help anyone to call it suicide. What it did is it hurt the investigation because the leads that were still unexplored at that time have never been explored.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we want law enforcement to get involved. We've developed other leads that can best be explored by law enforcement, because if we go to people and say, did this happen? Was this a factor? And they're witnesses, they're not going to talk to us. Because people lie to civil attorneys, but they don't lie to the police. So
right.
We want the police to be able to go to these people first and get their story before they, you know, tell a lie, then they lock themselves into the lie, and then we never
mm-hmm.
find the truth. That's
very good
why
point.
We have law enforcement. And if we can't rely on the law enforcement, we're truly not protected.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a great deal of respect for law enforcement. They're selfless, and they're sworn to uphold the law, and we need them desperately in our society. But sometimes we can't let them take the easy way out and close the case for convenience sake.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that's why they did it here. I'm sure they believed what they said, but we don't believe that they had all the information. In fact, we found out in the last couple of weeks that some key witness interviews were never transcribed.
Oh, my gosh.
And only the officer who talked to these people knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't report it to everybody, nobody would know. Dr. Lucas would have no idea that, for example, and this is something that was leaked by Dina,
mm-hmm.
The day of Max's incident, Rebecca was overheard saying to Zina in the back of a patrol car, Zina's going to kill me. And we had that information 9 months ago. We
right.
didn't put it in the tabloids. We didn't say premonition of death. We didn't say anything like that. We kept it secret because we're dealing with law enforcement. So they put it out there in their report. Well, the only reason for that is to damage control, to get ahead of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that public relations people do. And that doesn't make for a solid basis for an investigation.
Exactly
right. What does is hard police work. And
mm-hmm.
that's what we're looking for. And we have a two-page list of things, immediate things that we would like law enforcement to take a look at. Evidence
mm-hmm.
that we can't get. Federal law prevents us from getting access to Rebecca's email account.
Mm-hmm.
And so only law enforcement can get this. And we're stymied. What if something's there?
Exactly.
You know, we're all going to feel like idiots later on if something turns up there that we could have had a year ago.
Absolutely.
This is a perplexing case. We think it's a homicide masquerading as a suicide, and hopefully law enforcement will revisit its measured opinion and reopen the investigation. We're not even asking them to declare Rebecca's death a homicide. Just reopen
mm-hmm.
it. Take a look. Look
Take
at
look.
These things. But right,
right.
now, they won't do anything because it's closed.
30 seconds. We got 30 seconds.
Jonas Shacknai was generous to open his home to the forensic engineer that Dina hired
mm-hmm.
so he could come in and do measurements and all of that. I hope that he would show the same generosity to San Diego law enforcement to allow them to come in and do a recreation of Rebecca's death and also Max's. You know, the precedent has been set, so
yes,
let them in there. And,
let them in
and
to
let
do their job.
Let me just say, I don't have a dog in this race. I'm completely open-minded. Give me the information, and I will assess it based on my understanding of forensics and my background. I'm not a forensics pathologist, but, you know, I work with a good guy, and,
yes.
You know, I have a better-than-average view of it as a civilian. I'd like to see Max's full autopsy information.
That would be that. We're going to have to leave it at that, Donna Kaufman. Thank you so much. And Marty Redoy, thank you very much. And Marty, please pass along our heartfelt condolences to Rebecca's family. And if there is anything that we can do on Web Sleuths to help you, we have some great researchers on board. We've got a lot of people that can do a lot of stuff, and they're just waiting to help you. So don't hesitate to contact me, okay?
Okay, and please keep discussing it, because we do monitor the site, and we're in alignment with the sympathies you've expressed, and I thank you, and I'll pass it along to the family.
Thank you so much. Okay, we're going to switch gears right now. We are going to talk about one of Levi Page's most favorite people on the planet, Drew Peterson. Hi, Levi. How are you?
I'm good,
Levi.
Teresa. How are you?
I am fabulous. Thank you very much. Levi, you've been so shy about Drew Peterson. We need to get your real feelings out about the man today. Boy, what a scumbag, huh? I mean, it's just watching the trial, you know, the little bit I've seen. Well, I haven't seen that much, because every time I tune in, it's a sidebar. And as Kimster kind of gave me a little bit of a roundup of the week, basically that's what it's been, sidebars. And it looks like... some people feel, at least on the forum, that the judge is siding with the defense. Levi, have you noticed that at all in the Drew Peterson trial? He's on trial for the murder of his ex-wife, Kathleen Savio.
I noticed that a lot of people are very upset with the judge in that case, and I've noticed that a lot of people on Web Sleuths are upset over the judge as well. I've noticed that a lot, haven't you, Kimster?
Kimster.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sorry about that. I was on mute. Absolutely. In fact, somebody posted, and it was quite a few years ago, but I guess this judge was running for, Levi, correct me if I'm wrong, but district attorney, and lost to the current district attorney. And some have speculated that possibly there might be some bad grapes going along about that. I would hope not, that he wouldn't use this high-profile case to do something like that, but some people are speculating along those lines.
Well, if he did, you know, that would be very awful to do, because Drew Peterson is not a very well-liked person. So I don't know why he would favor with someone like Drew Peterson. I mean, this is a guy who has a record of domestic violence, and we've seen it even come out in this case. We've had many people that have taken the stand and testified recently that he was abusive to Kathleen Savio, and that Kathleen Savio was so scared of him that she slept with a knife under her pillow at night, and that he had snuck into her home many times, and she had told people, and this is one thing that has come out that has helped the prosecution, that the judge did allow to be admitted into evidence, that he has snuck into her house at night wearing all black, and that he put a knife to her throat in the staircase of their home. So why would he side with Drew Peterson? That's troubling that he would side with such a sick individual like this man, such an arrogant scum.
Exactly. And Levi Page, that's what's so troubling, like you said, is why in the world would the judge side with somebody like Drew Peterson? We can't get into the mind of this judge in the Drew Peterson case, but from what I've been reading on Web Sleuths and from talking to people about it, there is a bias there, and you've just got to say, logically, is it because he lost to the prosecutor? Is he that petty?
Our
you know,
and political, that plays a role in a lot of these cases.
Absolutely. And, you know, judges can are not perfect. Recently, when I was in L.A. Doing my testifying against a stalker, the judge was an absolute jerk. I've never met a more snotty, rude, arrogant jerk in my life. And, you know, he's appointed for life. There's nothing they can do about him. Nobody can stand him. And it was a horrible experience. And we were trying to get a crazy man off the street. And thank goodness the jury didn't pay any attention to the judge and paid attention to the evidence. But my point is, judges are human, and boy, they can do some really strange stuff. And it may just be that petty in the Drew Peterson case. Let's bring in Donna Kaufman, true crime author. You've written a zillion books. You followed the Drew Peterson case from the very beginning. Give us some inside scoop, if you can, about being a reporter, following the case, how it works. I don't know. You always seem to have the good, like I was talking to you off the air, the good, interesting tidbits that we know nothing about. So if you have anything, just lay it out there.
My most recent book is From Crime Scene to Courtroom, and there's a chapter on the Drew Peterson case, and it really takes you through his whole, all of his marriages, his background, and, you know, the guy is definitely not a friend to women. And this week, one of his ex-girlfriends testified against him, which really must have made him angry. But having said that, I always look at what is the evidence. We can't bring in his missing fourth wife, Stacy. It's just not the place for it. They don't have the goods to charge him with that case. But it's only because she went missing that they decided to take a second look at Kathleen Savio's death, which everyone agrees is drowning. But how you interpret the injuries is another thing. And I heard his attorney on a television show recently suggesting that she had bruises on her knees, which she must have gotten from a sex act with her boyfriend. I just about fainted when I heard that. And the thing you have to look at in when you read an autopsy report is, what is a vital injury? What is a bruise? The color of a bruise matters. Nancy Grace didn't seem to understand this when she talked about the physical injuries. But there are bruises on Kathleen that are purple. That means they're already on the road to healing. The knee ones, especially she had two rambunctious young boys in her household, those were old bruises. The fresh one was to the back of, to her buttocks, as if somebody with steel-toe boots kicked at her. That was a brand new injury. The cut to the back of her head was a brand new injury. So you can look at these things and see if it's a red bleeding bruise, that's fresh. That is from the time of death. Mm-hmm. And what my theory is that she was grabbed by the hair and she sustained that injury to the back of her skull from being hit against where the bathtub fixture is, with the spout with the water. They never tested that to see if it had hair or skin fragments on it. The original testing was never done on that thing. So that's a conceivable thing. I cannot see any scenario that shows me she would have done that from the flat surface of the bathtub. Mm-hmm. And there was a female in the coroner's office for the third autopsy, which was done by the official Will County coroner. And that person who worked in the office was the same size and weight.
Oh, that's right,
and
yeah.
And she tried to replicate the same thing. She couldn't replicate.
Couldn't do it.
How Kathleen ended up in that bathtub. But my scenario of her being knocked out by having her head hit, make contact brutally with that faucet, whatever you call the spout where the water comes out of the bathtub.
Yeah.
That certainly accounts for that. That could certainly explain it. And she had a lot of dried blood in her hair. So, I mean, that's one scenario. But I have to be honest and say I've always thought the evidence was extremely shallow.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one thing Drew is, he's smart, and he worked in around homicides for 30 years, including SWAT team. He knows his way around, you know, making...
He does, yes.
And even, you know, everyone testifies that he said, I'll make it look like an accident.
Make
and
look,
if anyone has the ability to do that, it's this guy.
It's
but I still think, in, you know, it comes down to what can you prove. And since they had such a shallow case, I think they should have let him out on bond. And I won't be surprised if there's no conviction.
Exactly. Let me go to Levi Page. We're talking about the Drew Peterson case. Levi, this may be a repeat of the summer of hell of 2011 when Casey Anthony was found not guilty. remember
also
that?
In my book.
Yes, exactly. Levi, you remember that, of course. I remember you were on Twitter exploding, as was everybody. Levi, what do you think? Don't you think if Drew Peterson is found not guilty, his arrogance and his ego will be so out of control, we'll never see him. We'll just see him all the time. He'll never shut up.
Well, unlike Casey Anthony, who's gone into hiding and refuses to talk to anybody or give an interview or anything as of yet, Drew Peterson is going to do all of that. This guy's going to write a book. He's going to try to get a movie. He's going to be all over the television. You're not going to be able to keep his... you know, bald, ugly mug off of the television screen. So
Levi,
he's going to be on there talking nonstop. And Tricia, you know what he's also going to do is remember before he was even arrested that he and his attorney, Joel Brodsky, were calling into local radio shows.
Yes.
Trying to set Drew Peterson up on dates with
dates.
Women playing games with shock jock radio hosts. So, you know, that behavior is just going to continue if he walks. But I think that one thing that helps the prosecution is this judge has allowed in hearsay evidence to be admissible in this trial, and we're hearing people testify that Kathleen Savio had bruises on her body, and she told those witnesses, for an example, she told one of her, she had been going to school, I think it was nursing or something like that, and she told one of her fellow students that that Drew Peterson was abusive to her and showed her bruises on her body and even gave her a story that is similar to other people that have also testified for the state where he had snuck into her home wearing all black. And I also think that we're going to see an upcoming testimony from Neil Shorey, which was Stacy's pastor, and
yes.
He is going to testify that Stacy Peterson was coached on what to tell law enforcement when they interviewed her about Kathleen Savio's murder, and that Stacy Peterson, told the pastor that she was told to lie for Drew and be his alibi, and that reality, Drew Peterson was not in the home with her the night that Kathleen was murdered, that he was gone. And
right, Drew
also
sat beside her during her police questioning.
That's right.
Yeah, and we're going to hear from that pastor. I think that he's going to be very credible. I think the defense is going to try to muddy him up and say, well, you know, you gave an interview to Fox News, so you're out here for the media attention. But I don't know if that's going to work or not to muddy up the preacher and his credibility. I also think that Look at what they tried to do to the sister, the defense.
Yes.
She had written a book on domestic violence, and they tried to say that her motives were to gain money financially using this case, and that she had a stock in getting Drew Peterson convicted, and she was probably going to write a book whether Drew Peterson's convicted or not guilty, and her book was on domestic violence, not specifically this case. So I think
that was worth exploring. She got $30,000 for a book. And, you know, it doesn't matter how the outcome of the trial goes. She still has a book deal. She can still talk about domestic violence. But the defense brought up some good points about the sister who never did anything with all the outcry that she heard. She never did anything. Kathy had asked her, take care of my boys if I'm not here to raise them. If he kills me, take care of them. She never did. She wasn't around for birthdays or Christmas, or she didn't send them cards or gifts.
But that doesn't have anything to do with whether Drew Peterson killed Kathleen Savio or not. And we don't really know her background. Now, didn't she try and call the police and nobody called her back when Kathleen was killed? Let's go with Levi first. Go ahead, Levi.
Okay. She said that she called police in 2004. She called them once. And the defense say, well, why didn't you call them in 2005? Why didn't you call them in 2006? Why did you? And then she called them again in 2007 after Stacy had been missing. Mm-hmm. She did call police. She may not have been there for the family, but also would Drew Peterson allow her to be there for the children?
That's a good question. Yeah, she might have been prevented from being
absolutely
there. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Because Stacy had been with some of their children.
Right. They wouldn't let her see the kids. I remember that. At least that's what it said in the movie, and I believe that is in one of the reports that I read. Let me ask you this, Levi Page. Okay, now I just lost my train of thought here because I'm thinking about Drew Peterson, and I get so darn angry.
Go
ahead. Yes,
here?
Please do.
One of the things is that when Drew and Kathy were separated but not yet divorced, and he had taken up with a 17-year-old, which was Stacy. He would get Stacy, who was impressionable, to do all these horrible things to Kathleen and enjoy torturing the ex-wife. And now that they're both gone and presumed dead, I have no doubt that Stacy's dead, they're sort of united in spirit to go up against this guy. And finally, I mean, they probably would have been friends from the beginning if they didn't have this monster, at the nexus of their relationship.
Exactly. That's a very good point.
So
Levi Page?
Better late than never.
Yes, exactly. Levi, you were going to say something?
And you know what, Tricia? Even though the Stacy Peterson case is not going to be that big in the Kathleen Savio case, what this trial is about, you got to think, he got Stacy when she was young, when she
really
was impressionable,
young.
And maybe the reason why he killed her, and that's just my opinion, he's innocent until proven guilty. He's not charged with Stacy's murder. Nobody's been found. But one of the reasons he may have killed her was because she was, figuring him out, seeing him for being a sneaky, manipulative person, a liar. She might have thought, this guy killed Kathleen Savio, and I'm not going to stand by him anymore, someone that is going to kill another human being. And
I think that's,
And she wanted to leave, and that's why he killed her. That's why she's missing now. Nobody can find the body.
That's exactly what happened. We're going to have to leave it on that. Levi Page, give us your addresses and phone number, not phone numbers, and times of your shows and everything else that's going on in your life.
Okay, well, you can watch all of my past shows at levipageshow.com. And we're going to be starting the show up in another week or so. Tricia is on every Friday, so tune in there. That's at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, and that is levipageshow.com. Thanks, Tricia.
Thank you, Levi, and thanks for taking the time to call in. Donna Kaufman, true crime author and good friend, wrap it up. What you got going that you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm working on a new book now, and I'm not going to say what it's about. It's about the same thing that I always write about.
Mm-hmm.
But the cases are, there are two, especially maybe three, maybe four of the chapters that, it's as if I'm writing it for our friends at Web Sleuths and Forums for Justice. So I guess you can guess what it's about. So, but I know that we're going to have a very enthusiastic a welcoming view of what we have to say about some of these cases.
Very good. Oh, Donna, I can't wait. You've got me wondering. Thank you, Donna. We're going to have you on the show. We're going to be doing some updates on the JonBenet Ramsey case because James Kohler's book is really taking off and things are starting to happen. So we'll have you back on shortly when I have James Kohler on again. Okay. Thank you, Donna. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Tricia, and thanks to all the people online who keep these cases alive and keep us all inspired.
Thank you, Donna. You take care now. Bye-bye.
Okay, Trish. Bye.
Okay, Kimster. Okay, I want to state that was not my dog barking. I always get blamed. I've had sugar gliders, dogs, cats, but all of my animals are in another household tonight. Every Sunday night, they go to another house, so it doesn't happen anymore. Remember that time Carol McKinley did the dishes on the air? I thought that was so funny. Okay, Kimster, it's time now.
Wait, before we get started, I want to know what happened to those sugar gliders.
Oh, well, you know, I'll tell you what happened. Now, if you ever have a chance to get some sugar gliders, don't do it. They're messy. They're cute as all get out, but all they do all day long is have, or all night long is have sex. And, you know, I'm sitting in here and they're just, that's all they did. Sex and eat and sleep. You know, it's a great life for them. Not so good for me. And they smell really, awful. They just, it's just terrible. Don't get sugar gliders. I found someone, a friend of a friend, who was trying to buy sugar gliders, and you can't get them in Utah. And she was offering like $150 a piece, and I said, I'm not going to sell them to you. I said, but I want to come to your house and see what you got. Well, I go there to her house, and it's like sugar glider heaven. You know, it's almost like a sugar glider obsessed home. It's beautiful, the setup she has. So they went to a lovely home to a woman who loves them, and I don't have to deal with them anymore. I thought they'd be cute and sweet, and we could take them out and pet them and all of that. I took them from a relative who was sick, and normally I wouldn't have. But, yeah, they're gone now. And so, fortunately, they did get out one time on the show, and that was really fun. And they do fly. They glide. They jump around and they glide. It's like having bats flying at your face. So there you go. There's my sugar glider story. Don't do it. Don't get sugar gliders. Okay, Kimster, my darling, wonderful friend, what is going on in the Web Sleuth hot cold case? Tell us all about it.
Well, Tricia, I haven't even told you about this part, but this week, after I created the thread on Web Sleuth for this case, this victim started a lot of questioning from our members about an unidentified woman known as Princess Blue.
Mm-hmm.
So things have already started developing even before we made this announcement. But I guess our cold case for this week looks a lot like Princess Blue's composite drawing, which I didn't know at the time. Yeah, pretty interesting. This week's cold case of the week is Sofia Herrera Moreno. And she was last seen by her mother at a washateria in Bryan, Texas on May 11, 1979. She told her mother she would attend a family gathering later that week, but she never arrived. She has never been heard from again. Sophia's family members told authorities that her husband had violent tendencies. Foul play is suspected in Sophia's disappearance. And, Tricia, I was digging into an unidentified case in Oregon about a year ago, and in my research, I saw Sophia's case, and I talked to law enforcement here in Oregon, and they said she was looked at as a possible match but was ruled out in that case. Mm. So imagine my surprise when I saw that we had a new member on Web Sleuth just this last month posting about Sophia. She says she's a friend of the family, and the family needs our help. And the family, I guess, has heard stories that Sophia may have been murdered and then her body taken to Houston, Texas. So all of you out there in Houston, Texas, please check this thread out. The family is trying to breathe new life into this case and bring Sophia home. So let's do what we can do to help them. And, Tricia, you remember what to do?
Yes, I do.
Remember what to do? Right, go to www.websleuth.com.
Absolutely, and it's right there on the front page. You can't miss it.
Right there up in the upper right-hand corner. You'll see that picture of Sophia and a link to her thread. And what do you do if you're not a member of Web Sleuth?
You join. It's free. It's free.
And
all we need is an email address, a real email address, okay? Like, just join, and if there's a problem, we'll contact you with your email address. That's all we need.
Right.
You know, the stories that we take personal information, no, just an email. That's it.
Yeah, yeah, it's really easy. You can join. You can get involved in some of these cases. You heard the attorney for Rebecca say that the family and friends read Web Sleuths. They want to know what we have to say and what we think and see if there's some tips out there that'll help. So please join today.
Exactly, and I want to just kind of piggyback on that, if I may, Kimster. Believe me, my friends, on Web Sleuths, you are making a difference. The media, the people involved in the case, the investigators, the police, the families, they all read there. And they're not going to come, you know, the investigators are not going to call up and say, hey, you guys gave us a great idea and we did it and it worked. They'll never hear it. That's just how it is. But that's okay because we're not here to get, you know, good attaboys or pats on the back. We're just here to help. And just by posting a simple post, I'm thinking of you, my thoughts are with your family, that means so much to so many involved in these cases. So go to websleuths.com and take it from there. Well, Kimster, another great show. Thank you so much for all your help. You'll be back with us next week, right?
Yes, I will.
Okay, good deal. And we'll be back at our regular time next week. We had to move it up an hour because one of our guests couldn't make it at our normal time. But next week, we will be back at 8 p.m. Eastern. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio. We discuss true crime, current events, and we always do so with common sense. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.